Certainly been a wonderful day to begin a new year, to have the opportunity to come to worship God with those of like precious faith. Had a special opportunity in the class in the 10 o'clock hour to read through the entire book of Hebrews. And we pray that God blessed that reading. It certainly was enjoyable and certainly beneficial to us. And it is a wonderful thing to be able to go to God and sing songs of praises to Him, to commune around His table, to talk with Him in prayer. These are blessings that we have every week, and we need to take opportunity to do that. It is a blessing to us, but it is also a responsibility we have to God to worship Him in spirit and truth, to praise His great and His holy name. We're glad to be able to do that today, and we thank you for being here, especially those who are visiting with us. We want you to know how much we appreciate your presence. As you can see up on the board, the text that we're going to use to introduce our lesson is taken from the book of Ecclesiastes in the 8th chapter, if you would like to turn there. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, we're going to read verses 11 through 13. An interesting passage as I read through the wisdom literature. This is one that stands out to me, especially verse 11 of the text, though it will take up only a portion of our study. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. And though a sinner does evil 100 times and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before Him. It will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he does not fear before God. One of the things we see in the wisdom literature, especially both the book of Proverbs, as well as the book of Ecclesiastes, is a very practical treatment, not only of spiritual matters, but also the impact that our righteousness, if we seek to be righteous, has upon this earth. And that as the thesis of our lesson today is, the impact that evil can have upon the earth as well. And so there are applications we can note. And of course, I do recognize how important it is for in the pulpit, unless it details a specific moral issue, for us not to be political. I'm not going to strive to do that. But there are some points that I would like to make as it regards our culture in this day and time. We live in a nation that is in many ways a wonderful experiment in ruling man. I don't know of any other place on earth that I would like to live than the United States of America. And that is especially so with regard to our justice system. It's an interesting philosophy that our founding fathers had in establishing what is what we refer to as an adversarial system, which is designed to protect the innocent who may have been accused of a crime. We know in other places and in other times, if one was accused, he basically, in the accusation, was found guilty. There was very little chance that he would be exonerated for whatever crime he was accused of. But that is not necessarily the case in our day and time and in our nation. The reading of rights, the presumption of innocence, warranty requirements, a jury of your peers, a speedy trial, the ability to face your accuser, the granting of counsel, the refusal of double jeopardy. We could go on and on with regard to all of the rights that have been created in our rule of law to protect the one who is presumed to be innocent until he is proven to be guilty of the crime. And that's the design. But we also know in practice, it's difficult, and it gives an undue protection and help to the guilty from time to time. And it is possible and does happen, especially in our day, that there are those who might be guilty of crime who get off scot-free for the crime that they did commit. When that happens, there is no justice for the victims or their families. You know, as I do, that in many states there is no death penalty for capital crimes. And there are some who have made the justice system in some places almost a revolving door, because they actually have the philosophy that it does no good to our community for those who are guilty of crime to be arrested and serving time for that. And as a result, we can say in very, I think, real terms that there are problems with our judicial system. Now, it's that way in every nation, and it's that way in every time. Either to one extreme or another, it can be. But the reason for that is because these are created by men. As I said, this is a great experiment that our founding fathers had well over 200 years ago. I remember the 200-year anniversary of our nation when I was younger. But much time has passed since then, but there is still this experiment that is ongoing, and in many ways it is very good, but men have created it. Men function in control of it, and as a result of that, corruption is inevitable. And while I would not live in any other system, we know that this is the case. Now, having said that, I don't want you to think I've got the solution to the problem, because I don't have any procedural fixes for what ails our judicial system. But what is imperfect in our nation is contrasted in the perfection of Scripture, and that is with regard to how God deals with evil. And that's what I want to talk about just for a few moments this morning. There are some truths that have impact not only in our day and time as we live on this earth, but also in eternity, that I think are beneficial in our study. We want to talk first of all and make the point that it's important for evil to be punished quickly. And that's what I said is the beginning of this in verse 11 of the text, a verse that I have read on a number of occasions with regard to the death penalty, for example, or with regard to other crimes. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. And I was thinking about perhaps some issue that's in our society today without, again, trying to establish my views in regard to the rightness or wrongness of the various arguments that are being shown in our society, but trying to anecdotally kind of come across an illustration of this in our society. And what came to my mind, first of all, is the immigration debate. Again, we're not going to be talking about whether the unauthorized or the crossing of our borders should be considered illegal, only that it is, and it has been for a long while, and often the law is not being followed. And so just to contrast this, and so to show the point, there in the previous administration, when the idea was predominant that we need more immigration and we need more lenience with regard to those who are immigrating in an illegal or an undocumented fashion, there were between 5.5 and 9 million people that immigrated to our country, raising the total amount of undocumented workers in our country to about 15 million in total. And then there was a change in administration. The laws were the same. The laws have been the same in both cases, but the laws began to be followed a bit more closely in order to be enforced a bit more stringently. And by May of this year, since the new administration has begun to prosecute and deport these illegal immigrants, as they would put it, or as others would put it, undocumented workers, the numbers have decreased significantly. They said it's decreased over 90%. And of those undocumented workers that get in, that are accosted by the Border Patrol, none of them are being released into the country. That's a very different thing over those periods of times. Now, again, this isn't a discussion regarding empathy or tactics, whether draconian tactics are appropriate or necessary, any of those kinds of things. It is simply to say that when the prescriptions against a particular action are not exercised, then the individuals are emboldened to do those things. That's a very nice way of putting what the Lord said, that because of the crime not being punished, the hearts of men are fully set in them to do evil. And so I want you to know from that, the importance that God places upon our society and upon our nation and our laws to be the type that help the oppressed and help those who are perhaps victims and take care of our society so that righteousness is extolled and evil is punished. That's what God expects. And that's why I had Brother Tommy read the text from Isaiah chapter 10. I wanted to read again verses 1 and 2 of Isaiah chapter 10. We read from Isaiah 59 as well. But Isaiah chapter 10, I want you to note what was said here. He said, "Woe to those who decree unrighteous decrees, who write misfortune, which they have prescribed, to rob the needy of justice, to take what is right from the poor of my people, that widows may be their prey and that they may rob the fatherless." And so that does show that there is a responsibility that God gives to nations to do what is right with regard to its people, to protect those who are innocent, those who would be victims, and especially as a country, not to pass laws and procedures which would oppress those who are either vulnerable or those who are righteous. And so that's a very important point to make. Now, again, that's not really the central part. The central part of our study is found in the next couple of verses. And I would like you to turn with me to Psalm 73. Psalm 73 to establish the second truth, because this is the one that I think needs to be explained just a bit and causes us problem in our day. In Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 12, we are told, "Though a sinner does evil 100 times, and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before him." So I want you to understand this statement is an acknowledgement of something that we think would be inappropriate that happens in our day and time. So though it may be, we've got a sinner, we've got a wicked individual out here, and he does evil 100 times. He's extremely evil, and yet we are told his days are prolonged. So it happens, doesn't it? It doesn't take much of us, much for us to see that anecdotally in our society. Someone who does evil and yet he gets away with it, or his days are prolonged. And people began asking, why does God allow these kinds of things? We're not the only one that asked that. The psalmist asked that in Psalm 73. I want you to note in verse 2 of the text, going through verse 5, the psalmist said, "As for me, my feet had almost stumbled, my steps had nearly slipped, for I was envious of the boastful. When I saw the prosperity of the wicked, there are no pangs in their death. Their strength is firm. They are not in trouble as other men, nor are they plagued like other men." It's hard for the psalmist to understand that. Isn't that what you see in our society today? We ourselves will ask it from time to time, but there are many individuals who will not even accept the possibility of a just and righteous God because there's evil in the world. And so it is a struggle for us to recognize that the wicked get rich, those in power and influence ridicule the idea of getting caught in their corruption, they make fun of the poor, they add to their oppression, they ridicule God, asking, well, how does God know? As we noted, they're always at ease. But then the psalmist thought about it properly. And I want you to note verses 14 and 16 of Psalm 73. He said, "All day long I've been plagued and chastened every morning. And when I thought how to understand this, it was too painful for me." But then, when he considered God's faithfulness, he concluded differently. Beginning in verse 17 of the text, he said, "Until I went into the sanctuary of God, and then I understood their end." That's something for us to keep in mind as well. I went to the sanctuary of God. So now, if we go to God, and we begin to know of God, and know of his dealings with men, and know of his character, and know of his promises that he has granted unto us, and we learn about life after death, and about eternity, and about punishment, and about blessings, and we understand all of these things because we have gone into the sanctuary of God, then we begin to have some understanding. He says in verse 18, surely you, having reference to God, you set them in slippery places. Now here we have all of those who are rich and all of those who are evil and all of those who are oppressing the poor and all of them that are involved in this stuff. And we say, just how are they getting away with it? Why doesn't God strike them dead? And so God, we are told, the psalmist acknowledges this, God sets them in slippery places. And you, God, cast them down to destruction. Oh, how they are brought to desolation as in a moment, and they are utterly consumed with terrors. And so there is that promise that an end will come to those who are evil. We're going to talk not only about the establishment of wickedness and evil in the world, but the end of it. So notice in verse 27 and 28, in that psalm and our discussion of it, said, indeed, those who are far from you shall perish. You have destroyed all those who desert you for harlotry. It's good for me to draw near to God. I have put my trust in the Lord that I may declare all your works. So there is an end. So let's talk for just a few moments about the end of the wicked. Go to verse 13 of Ecclesiastes 8. We are told, it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he does not fear before God. Now, it almost seems like in those two verses that there's a bit of contradiction. The wicked sins 100 times, and yet he prolongs his days. But now, in the very next verse, we are told it won't be well with the wicked, and he will not prolong his days. His days are as a shadow. And this is where we get to brass tacks in discussing this issue. Because it is the case that if there is wickedness on the earth, there will be an end to that wickedness. God will bring that wickedness to an end. So if we talk about the prosperity of the wicked, it is only temporary. It does not last forever. Now, you can see it in our society, can you not? You certainly do see the wicked people who have a tendency to get away with things, but then all of a sudden, at some point in the future, for many of them, there is this comeuppance that they receive. Sometimes it is they get caught. Sometimes it is their wickedness is punished. Perhaps it is the lifestyle that they're living, a lifestyle of drunkenness or a lifestyle of covetousness or a lifestyle of gluttony or these kinds of things that lead to consequences, whether it be with the government or whether it be with regard to their bodies or whatever the case may be. And so truly, there is not a long time prosperity for the wicked. Now, let's point out the fact that the prosperity of the wicked sometimes keeps the wickedness itself and the punishment thereof from being evident. In other words, we take as an example 1 Timothy 5 and verse 24, where Paul put it this way, some men's sins are clearly evident, preceding them to judgment, but those of some men follow later. And there are two things to look at in regard to this. One time is some men, maybe hypocrites, for example, they're sinning and they're not acceptable to God, but nobody knows it because they hide it pretty well. And so they may get away with it for a very long time. Or it may be that some are pretty bold with regard to their ungodliness and their wickedness, but it seems like we still can't get them. And they continue to prosper for a long period of time. You consider, for example, a public figure, a politician or a celebrity, that they have a very good reputation, and then here comes the scandal, and they're caught in the scandal, and their reputation changes, and their life may be ruined as a result of it. Sometimes the world doesn't care. I think this is one of the problems, because not only does the world not care, but sometimes they even rejoice in the ungodliness and wickedness of others, and because of that, the wickedness goes unpunished while we live here on this earth. And then we get to Isaiah 59 and verse 13, which was read by Tommy a bit earlier, about fallen Israel. We are told they transgressed and lied against the Lord. They departed from God. They spoke oppression and revolt and conceived and uttered words of falsehood. Justice is turned back. Righteousness stands afar off. Truth is fallen in the street. Equity can't enter. Truth fails. And he who departs from evil makes himself a prey. But then notice this. The Lord saw it. And it displeased him that there was no justice. And this is where the judgment of the Lord does indeed come in. Because as we see from our passage, it will not be well for the wicked. His days are as a shadow. So his days are prolonged. He's getting away with it. He gets away with it. Maybe he gets away with it till the day of his death. But this life is but a vapor that appears for a little while and then it vanishes away and no man escapes the judgment of God. And we are told we'll be judged by the things that we have done, whether good or whether bad, in accord with the words that are written in the book. And so the standard has been established for us, and those who are wicked, they may get away with it on this earth, but don't think for a second that they or you will get away with wickedness in eternity, because it simply will not happen. That's why the Lord himself in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26, he asked the question, what profit is it to a man to gain the whole world and to lose his own soul? What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? The value of the soul is that it is eternal in nature. And for an individual to say, I'm going to be wicked and do what I want to on this earth. I'm going to get all the money I can get all the power I can. I can mistreat others, and by mistreating others, I can gain ascendancy, maybe gain acclaim, certainly get away with it in my time. But what they're doing is forfeiting their standing with God. Because in eternity, it doesn't work that way. There's so many people in so many different ages, so many different cultures, so many different nations who have thought that they could get away with it. And they may have died and taken their last breath thinking, I got away with it. But none of them did. Because in that day, God will judge us. Now, the final point that I want to make as we draw our lesson to a close by way of conclusion is to parallel that and say it is both the wicked and the righteous who will have their accounts settled in eternity. And as we consider this, we perhaps have a better grasp on how we are on this earth, because not all of us have easy lives. I acknowledge that. You think about Lazarus, the beggar, who asked for crumbs from the rich man's table, and who when he died, there is no mention of him being buried at all. Perhaps he was thrown into the valley of Hinnom outside of Jerusalem to be burned with the refuse. But he awoke in the bosom of Abraham and was comforted because he was righteous before God. This life is not what it's all about. Our accounts are settled in eternity. And so no matter how difficult our life might be, understand it is a life of rejoicing. It is a life that supplies for us the peace which passes understanding. And for the mature child of God, the one who really gets it, there is joy inexpressible. There is a blessedness. There is something that goes well beyond mere happiness. This is this blessedness that we receive as the people of God. And as a result of that, we have joy on this earth. And to say also that there is this law of cause and effect where there is much crime, especially if you find a wicked person who has violated the laws of the land when those laws are established as God intends for them to be, as Romans 13 tells us, to punish the wicked, that they will get what's coming to them. There are full prisons as a result of such evil that exist in our society today. Despite all of the corruption, despite all of the mistakes that men make with regard to the punishing of crime, it still gets punished to a very great extent. And there are a lot of people that think they can get away with their evil, and they just don't. But even if you do, even if you have a hard life, but you're righteous, you'll be blessed. Even if you have a great life, but you are wicked, you will be punished. You'll be judged. If you ever take the time to read that parable of the rich man and Lazarus, that account of the Hadean world that comes after death, where the rich man awoke in torments. When you lived, you had your good things. But now you are tormented in these flames. And for Lazarus, who was carried by the angels to the bosom of Abraham, where he was comforted as a result of his righteousness. That's what it's all about. And so we are told in Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 12, though a sinner does evil 100 times and his days are prolonged, so okay, this life is a difficult life, but it's good for the wicked and it's difficult for the righteous. He said, it's still the case. I surely know that it will be well with those who fear the Lord, who fear before Him. It's going to be good for us. And so the lives that we live, if we're living for Christ, are good lives. It doesn't matter how much money we make. It doesn't matter how much food we have on our table. It doesn't matter if we're like the Lazarus, the beggar. What is true is that we can have a hope of eternity in the presence of God forever, where there are no tears, nor crying, when there is no need for the sun, for God is the light therein. That's the blessing that is ours. And so we offer an invitation at this time, letting all who are here know that that is what awaits you if you respond to the gospel call and you seek to serve Him. That is that promise of eternity. There is no promise of a rose garden while we're here on this earth. It may be that your life is filled with briars and with thorns and difficulties in this life. But in heaven, in eternity, there is the presence of God. And for that, everything we live on this earth, everything we do, every day that we breathe, it's worth it for that promise of eternity that is ours if we're His. We want you to have that. If there is anything that is amiss in your life that we can help you with, anything that we can change, anything we can do for you, we offer ourselves to you at this time. Would you come now while together we stand, while we sing the song selected?